What's up, Beardos? You're listening to episode 249 of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Don't really answer the question first by not answering the question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beards.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. And you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's mini episode, we'll ask the question, is My Octopus Teacher a vegan film?
Paul, let me say right up front, whether or not this is a vegan film, I think it might be the thing that a lot of us need at this very moment in time.
Andy, I know this is a little bit of a spoiler to maybe how I feel about this movie, but it's an hour and a half movie. And when I hit the play button, I said to myself, this feels like it's going to be one of those Dodo films or videos that you see on Facebook sometimes that's like, this man adopted a duckling and like, look how cute it is. And they're these 7-minute videos and they're often very heartwarming. Sometimes they're very sad. And I was like, how is this an hour and a half about this journey of a person just hanging out with an octopus? And Andy, after watching this, I'm like, please let this be a new thing where it's just films about people just experiencing animals in this way. You could give me a 4-hour film like this and I would watch it, Andy, because I loved this.
That is like the strongest possible endorsement from one Professor Paul Steller. I wish the film was longer. I don't think you've ever said that in the history of this podcast.
I think it's true, Andy, but I'm speechless right now. I don't know how else to describe it. I love this film and I am very excited to talk about it with you.
Well, as you collect your thoughts, let me just make this quick announcement, which is another plug for my clothing line, Compassion Co. I'm doing it because if you're listening to this in a timely manner, right this very second, I am smack dab in the middle of another pre-order. This time I'm doing my annual turkey shirt, which we do every year around November, or at least planning to release the shirts in November. This time it's going to be benefiting Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary, and we're partnering up with Tofurky. So everybody who orders is getting some Tofurky coupons. There's opportunities to get a coupon for a free Tofurky product. And there's all sorts of good stuff, all sorts of, you know, Go Vegan Turkey stickers and buttons and all this good stuff that gets thrown in. So just wanted to plug that real quick because I do think some listeners would want to take advantage of that. And I have extended the coupon Beardo, which you can use to get 15% off your order. So you can support Great Sanctuary, support Ole Andy, and get some cool vegan swag to wear in the month of November to remind people of the plight of turkeys, who, of course, are even more exploited in the month of November. So you can go to CompassionCo.com, use the code Beardo. That's all I have to say about that, Paul.
Free tofurkey, Andy. I'm drooling over here. Also, if I guess this episode is going to come out next week, if you haven't watched the nice little Halloween video that Compassion Co. put on their Instagram, I watched it today. It just filled my heart with joy, Andy.
Spoiler alert, Paul. I am currently recording this episode 100% beardless, and you can see why that is the case by going to Compassion Co. the Instagram. It'll be up there in the IG stories section, but it's a fun little thing.
All right, Andy, shall we get into this film?
Let's do it. Let's ask the question, is My Octopus Teacher a vegan film?
I remember the day when it all started, seeing this really strange thing. A lot of people say an octopus is like an alien. But the strange thing is, as you get closer to them, you realize that you're very similar in a lot of ways. It's a hard thing to explain, but sometimes you just get a feeling and you know there's something to this creature that's very unusual. There's something to learn here. I had to have a radical change in my life, and the only way I knew to do it was to be in this ocean with her. this crazy idea. What happens if I just went every day?
Says from the trailer of My Octopus Teacher, which is currently streaming on Netflix, came out pretty recently. The reason we're reviewing it and asking this question, like, is it a vegan film, is because I've seen a lot of vegans recommending it and saying that this could like really open people's eyes up to the world of animals, the plight of animals. Paul, what do you think? Any triggers on this beautiful film?
I think there are, it made me tear up at the at points, Andy. So I think, but not in a, you know, extreme graphic nature or anything like that. I think in a way of extreme emotional connection, it made me it influenced me.
Yeah, all that is to say, this is not a film that's going to have your standard graphic footage of animals being exploited on, you know, agriculture or operations, anything like that. I mean, there's certainly some moments of animals in peril. There's acknowledgement of the fact that animals in the wild eat other animals. But otherwise, I would say an entirely pleasant film to watch. I can't imagine anyone would have too many objections to it unless you don't want to consume anything that I just described there. But and the plot synopsis from IMDb is: a filmmaker forges an unusual friendship with an octopus living in a South African kelp forest, learning as the animal shares the mysteries of her world. And this film is directed by Pippa Ehrlich and James Reed and stars Craig Foster and an octopus, which I believe goes unnamed throughout the entire film, correct?
I believe that is correct, Andy. And I did actually want to talk about that later in the spoiler section. I do feel like this movie we should do. I feel like we've been very lackadaisical with our spoiler-free spoiler sections and in the last few movie reviews. I feel like we should genuinely do a spoiler-free and a spoiler section for this one, because I do think this movie, there is elements of it that are worth going into without knowing anything about it.
Fair enough. So we will let everybody know when we hit the spoiler section, which will be the time when we really dig into the nitty gritty. But if you haven't seen the film, if you're curious what we think of it, would we recommend that somebody watches it? And I guess to the point of the episode title, do we think it's a vegan film? Should you share it with your friends that you hope to open up to the plight of animals and to go vegan, all that stuff? Let's talk about our general thoughts. Paul, I know we've already spoiled a bit of those, but what are your general thoughts on My Octopus Teacher?
Andy, I really, really enjoyed this movie. I think that it gives you this sense of this relationship with this animal that in typical, like, is not the tip, one of the typical animals that vegan or non-vegan films that have to do with animals are trying to make you feel emotional connections with. You know, it's like, we've had plenty of movies that we've enjoyed, for instance, like, that are talking about animals, farmed animal sanctuaries. So we get all these beautiful stories about people and connecting with, you know, cows and horses and pigs. And we get to hear their stories and we get these emotional connections with those animals. And those are, we've had plenty of examples where those are really great. And an octopus, Andy, is an animal that is not typically, you know, one that comes to mind when people are like, I want to get really emotionally invested in the story of this animal. And so this was one of the main reasons I was kind of hinting at this before, where I was like, how is this film more than 10 minutes long? Like, how am I going to get emotionally invested in this? And boy, was I wrong, Andy, because I felt so emotionally invested in this. The movie itself, if we want to talk more, like, I'm just talking generally, the movie is like beautifully shot. I know we try not to talk about these movies before we record this, but we mentioned to each other, Andy, it's like there's stuff that you see, there's footage that you see underwater that I've never seen before. And it really did give me just like a greater sense of appreciation of not just this particular octopus, but of all like the sea life creatures. And I feel like even if we come to the conclusion that this isn't like a vegan movie, I do think it gives a greater appreciation of sea creatures who are unfortunately often left out of the conversation of, oh, we should feel, you know, gratitude and compassion towards these animals. We don't get that a lot with sea creatures. And I do feel like this movie does give that.
Yeah, Paul, you mentioned a few things that are, I feel like, are kind of catnip for old Andy here. That beautiful that beautiful cinematography is just front and center throughout this whole film. And it was one of those things where the pace of this film was just perfect for me. I know in our recent film review series we did over our little late summer break, there was a couple films where I talked a lot about the pacing and what worked for me, what didn't work for me. And what works for me, of course, isn't going to work for everybody. But just as just a general film going experience, it was just such a relief from the world right now. I mean, now my context for watching this was seeing it the night after watching the presidential debates. And to go from, I don't know how I managed to watch the entire thing, but to go from an hour and a half of three men yelling over each other, which is just the most like frazzling, frustrating thing, to then immersing myself in this underwater world, like even leaving alone the story and the like emotional arc of this particular tale, just to witness what is captured on film and the way that it is captured. It's lots of beautiful slow motion shots and great like drone footage and just meandering through these kelp forests, which hats off to what's his name? Craig.
Mm-hmm.
Hats off to Craig, because man, if I get like a tickle of seaweed when I'm swimming, I am out of there. Like I can't imagine immersing yourself in that, let alone doing it at night or mm-hmm. just being down like 20 feet or whatever it is without an oxygen tank and blah, like it's just but to explore this world and to see just such intimate details of the very intimate codependent ecosystem that is happening down there, and to have it just be so visually gorgeous, so relaxingly paced, combined with a very affecting, intriguing. I'd learned so much from this film. I saw so many things I've never seen before. Something that you and I mentioned off recording was the first time either of us had seen a lobster swim ass first, apparently. First time I've seen a crab swim. Like, and there's just so many things that are going down there. I didn't know what a pajama shark was. Like, and all of that might be incredibly basic to some folks, but just seeing how things interact and things being these animals, but also just like the I guess foliage isn't the right word, but like the flora and fauna of the underwater world, and just seeing that delicate balance and delicate dance was such a pleasure. So like to your point, Paul, even if it's not a vegan film, it was one that I feel like I could pretty much wholeheartedly recommend to anybody to watch, especially if you're just in need of a relaxing evening enjoying this underwater photography. Like, I think it's quite a remarkable film for that reason. And, you know, when we mentioned the plot, we'll get into that a lot more in the spoiler section, but it's following Craig Foster, who decides to spend like a year or so, like yep. every single day visiting this octopus. And just like the dedication of that alone really speaks to like how I interpret the world, or how I like navigate through tasks and trying to be very meticulous. And even I was like, whoa, buddy, like that is like a lot of commitment. So I don't know if I have anything else to say that's not like spoilery. I have some nits to pick, but it's almost more for the sake of the fact that that's what you and I do. And I want to parse through those things, but they're not the same type of nits that I would pick for a film where I'm like, ooh, I'm not sure if I would recommend this to someone for this reason. It's just something I'm like, yeah, I just don't know if I would classify this as something that's going to promote veganism necessarily. So I guess there's the spoiler on my specific view on that. But overall, my general thoughts, Paul, it feels like such a home run of a film for so many reasons. And I could wholeheartedly recommend that anybody watches this film.
I think, Andy, people should just pause this episode and go watch the film right now, because I do think there are elements of the film that it's not, there are not plot twists to this film, but I do think there are elements where it's like, I would rather go into it not knowing what's going to happen.
Yes. So with that said, Paul, I mean, we both given a very, very wholehearted endorsement right there. And definitely, if you haven't seen it, go see it. If you have seen it and you want to continue on further, you want to hear us really kind of pick apart the film, talk about specific things we liked or didn't like, proceed with caution. So spoilers for My Octopus Teacher starting right now.
Hey, come on. I haven't seen it yet. It doesn't have anything to do with the plot. Still, I like to go in fresh.
Speaking of plot twists, the thing that kept happening was watching it and going, but how does the octopus do that? And then like 3 minutes later, the film would like answer that question. And it happened three or four times throughout the course of watching this film. And I was like, I should stop asking questions because I'm in good hands here. The film is anticipating that I'm curious about how an octopus eats a crab, eats an animal with a hard shell, like all of these things that I was just like, what, but how, but who, what, why, all of that. It was just so well put together.
Well, Andy, I feel like the film does a little bit of a humble brag when at one point Craig Foster's like, oh, and then I started reading through every academic paper on octopi that I could find. And then he's like, and I was even seeing stuff and documenting things that weren't even documented in these academic papers. And I was like, all right, Craig, but it's true. Like, how many of these academic papers have been living with people who have had this very specific experience of being able to essentially live with this octopus for a year in their natural habitat, like for all intents and purposes, undisturbed by anything else. Because to the point of the kind of like vegan leanings of this film, I guess, Craig Foster, I would say, does a very good job of not being intrusive into the octopus's environment or just any of the other creatures' environment.
Yeah. And I think, Paul, that this is one of the things that we are often wrestling with when we are having these types of conversations, where I know for me personally, I used to think the end goal of like veganism or having a vegan world or whatever is almost this like complete separation of human and non-human animals. Basically as an indication that we're like leaving them alone, that we are not trying to mess with them in any sort of way. And I think I've tiptoed back from that a bit and thinking that there is more of an opportunity for cohabitation or a symbiosis. I don't know if I'm using that word correctly, but like
it sounded right.
Let's just pretend that works. And this film feels like it's potentially a demonstration of that. Like, yes, Craig is down there and is sort of intruding, but it's kind of in the name of actually building a relationship. Now, we could talk about what the times that Craig chooses not to intervene. And you're like, if this was a true friendship, wouldn't you like knock those sharks out of here, I guess? But like, I don't know. I think it raises a lot of questions as to what is the nature of like the relationship that we want to have with animals, wild animals, domesticated animals. I think the film tries to grapple with that a bit and talking about what does the octopus get out of this particular relationship that is being forged here. But in general, I think that it does kind of point to like, there can be maybe it's just because I'm so enamored with the film, Paul, that I'm just like not being as critical as I should or something. But it just feels like this could be the opportunity to learn about animals in a way that is not exploitive, that is not interruptive, in a way that's in stark contrast to the things we were talking about in that episode of Mike Tyson fighting the shark, you know, where we're like, well, it's in service of the animal. They don't really seem to mind it that much, but it still feels like it's wrong, even if it's helping them a little bit, like, you know. And this is like, to me, this feels like it's a depiction of like, no, this is what it could actually look like. Now, obviously, a large shark is different from an octopus, but I think the point still stands. So I did appreciate that the film was treating the octopus as an individual with wants and needs and desires, and capable of saving themselves, capable of teaching others, and applying all these sort of emotions that I think most folks, most non-vegans, wouldn't necessarily apply to non-human animals, and certainly not a marine animal. There's definitely a huge empathy gap there. So I appreciated that aspect of the film.
I have two things I want to respond to what you said, Andy. But the first one, in my opinion, I think, again, maybe, like you said, maybe it's just because we're enamored with this movie, but I do see this as like the ideal way of interacting with animals. Like, this is the ideal relationship between a human and an animal, where like the animal is allowed to basically do what they want, and the human's not going to, you know, impose on them if the animal doesn't want them to. So I thought that it was kind of, I, in my opinion, like, this is what we should be going for. And I do think, Andy, that they do give this agency to the octopus that most films, I guess, don't, in the way that, and this is kind of getting to the second thing I wanted to get to. I feel like because at one point I specifically remember Craig saying, like, oh, and the octopus is feeling joy in an octopus sort of way. Like, I feel like this movie acknowledges that the octopus is not going to be experiencing these same exact emotions that humans might be, but that's okay. There is this thing that the octopus is doing where the octopus is getting something out of it. And I feel like so often we center these conversations around humans and we say, like, well, only the human is getting something out of it. And if the animal's getting something out of it, we frame it in the way of, oh, how would this look for a human? But I think this movie does something different where they're saying the octopus is getting something out of it. And Craig goes a lot into like the intellectual curiosity of the octopus. At one point he talks about like the octopus playing with fish and stuff like that. And I feel like it's like they say, the octopus, Andy's emulating the octopus playing with the fish.
So joyful. Picture like an octopus going on a roller coaster ride or something, just sticking those tentacles up in the air. So fun.
And I feel like, I'm like, wow, this is so powerful that they're saying like the octopus can be getting something out of these relationships, but it's different than what the humans are getting out of these relationships. And I'd like, I really, really enjoyed that this movie, I didn't think was trying to impose human emotions and human enjoyment and all these things on the octopus. And I do think that carries over to the fact that I this has to have been an intentional thing, Andy, that they don't name the octopus. Like, the whole movie, there's basically two characters. It's Craig and his son. There's two human characters, Craig and his son, and
his neglected son.
Yeah. And then there's the octopus, and they refer to the octopus as she. And since the only other two characters are Craig and his son, you know that that's who they're talking about. And at first I was like, why don't they just name this octopus like Susan the Octopus or something like that? But then I was like, that is a very human thing to do. Like, humans, and I am completely ignorant about this, other animals may have some, there are probably some animals that have some way of with specific clicks or noises of signifying different, like, between their relative animals, you know. I don't know that for sure. But to me, I was like, wow, naming someone is a very human thing to do. You know, when we name pigs, like, I'm trying to think of what's an exploitative name for a pig? Something to do with like bacon or something that.
Like crispy bacon.
Yeah. Like something like that. And in doing that, it's like, yeah, we're giving this, we're humanizing the animal in some way by giving them a name. But then also it's kind of like, this is clearly just for the human enjoyment. And I was like, the octopus doesn't care what her name is. So like, why give her a name that does nothing for the octopus? And so for me, I interpreted that as another way where we're giving this octopus like more agency to be an octopus. We're not filming this octopus to say, look how similar this octopus is to humans. We're filming this octopus to say, look how beautiful this octopus is, like, doing her little octopus things. And like, I thought that was great.
Paul, I want to respond to several things. I think that there is a lot of this film that's kind of appealing to that, look how similar an octopus is to a human. I think there's a lot of those moments that's essentially really prizing the octopus's intelligence and sense of play and all those things. And I think the intent of that is to say, look how similar an octopus is, even though this octopus is, as the film says in the beginning, kind of this alien creature to a lot of people. I do think it is kind of appealing to that. And to me, that is, I can't imagine having a film like this where you wouldn't address that because it is such a point of fascination within the film. Maybe the film shouldn't have drawn as much attention to it. But I do think that for a large part of the film, it kind of feels like Craig is saying, this animal is worthy of moral consideration because of the heightened level of intelligence, which is not something that is assigned to the fish or the sea anemones or those, what were they? Those really creepy sea spider star thingies.
Did not like those.
Did not. That was like the villain of the film. You're like, oh God, no. So I do think that is something that's maybe a fault of the film, or like a slight ding. Now, granted, by the end of the film, Craig is talking about how the experience has made him realize that all of the beings in this place are special. They all have like a role to play. And they're all kind of unique in their own way and kind of comes around to that very, like, I guess, kumbaya kind of like view of everything and respect for the animals. But I do think that the film does play into the, I guess, speciesist notion, or is it ableist? I don't know, that like essentially like animals with certain levels of cognition and intelligence and awareness are more worthy of moral consideration than others, you know, and in some cases that can be used to a specific advantage. I'm thinking of like the Non-Human Rights Project and how they're working to get, you know, the habeas corpus, for the monkeys and the elephants and things like that. And it's like, for them, that's like a foot in the door technique, but it also, I don't know, something about it in many instances is like, it shouldn't matter any of that stuff for them to be within our sphere of moral consideration, as long as they're able to feel pain and we don't want to inflict that on anyone, regardless of their level of intelligence, which is of course a human, not a human construct, but I guess like a human centric metric that we use. Yeah. So I do think I want to acknowledge that is a limitation of this type of film, even though I think it is a very effective way of telling the story, is to focus on these things that this octopus is very consciously doing and just how amazing this octopus is.
I don't disagree with you, Andy. However, I do feel like from the way that they were shooting things, where they would show, you know, the smallest of tiny sea creatures. And again, the filmography of, is that the word? The right word now. Last week has me real messed up about
cinematography.
So this, thank you. The cinematography of this movie is like phenomenal, and I don't know. I kind of get the impression that what the movie wants you to take away is that there is beauty in all of these living creatures, and even just like the plants that are underwater. And one thing that I did want Craig to say that he didn't, which is fine. I wanted him at, there's one part where the octopus is chasing after like a crab. And I wanted Craig to acknowledge something like, well, what if I was making this film about the crab instead of the octopus? How would I be feeling about this? But Andy, here's the thing, is I could have imagined them making this same sort of thing about the crab. And I could have imagined someone like Craig following some crab around and being like, because Craig seems like this very like wholesome, genuine person. I could imagine Craig following the crab around and being like, whoa. And then I was like amazed when I found out that crabs, my crab buddy does this thing. And now my crab did this thing. So while the point you bring up is valid, and certainly this specific film is about the octopus, who happens to be a more, I guess, if we're using this metric, this human centric metric, intelligent than many of these other sea life creatures, I could see them. I could see myself being interested in a film that was following around this one specific crab or a creature that doesn't have as much, I guess, intelligence as the octopus.
Yeah. And that's, of course, like intelligence in quotation marks. Paul, I would tell you, I'm telling you right now, I would watch a 2-hour documentary on a lobster swimming around the ocean.
Andy, can I talk about you mentioned the lobster swimming ass first before.
Paul, before you do this, I don't want to get too far away from this point.
Mm-hmm,
Put a pin in your thing, write it down if you need to. Just want to read a section from this Cracked article that I looked up, which I'm going to accept as fact. Dolphins, crows, primates, and parrots have all been observed using unique calls when they want the attention of specific members of their group. This means that at least among these species, individual animals actually have the equivalent of their own names.
That is very interesting, Andy. That's what I assumed, but what wasn't sure about. But yeah, I still like that they did not give the octopus a name.
I am undecided on if I like that or not, but I do know that if there was a crab documentary, I would like the crab to be named Carl.
Andy, lobsters, yes, Paul. Lobsters and crabs swimming around.
But first, they're not looking where they're going. What if they bump into another octopus?
I loved this. And again, this is like, I don't think this was the intentional point of the film, because if they are going to be underwater, they are probably going to see these sea creatures swimming around. So I don't necessarily think the filmmakers were like, get those lobsters swimming in here. I want these shots by tomorrow. But I think that the fact that, Andy, you and I have never seen this before probably indicates that many, many people have never seen something like that before. And for me, my entire perception of lobsters and crabs is, for the most part, for most of my life, like, oh, there is someone boiling up and eating that lobster or that crab. That is the context for which I put a lobster and a crab in my mind. If someone says lobster and crab, it's probably a seafood restaurant, you know? So the fact that we see these creatures, how they are supposed to be seen, for me was very moving. And I was like, oh, like this is how I wish, when someone said lobster or crab, this is the vision that I wish that I saw, is a lobster and a crab swimming around in the water and not like being boiled alive and served to someone to eat. And I hope that other people who do eat these creatures, I hope that they would watch this and think the same thing. Like, oh, these creatures exist outside of a tank in a seafood restaurant, you know? Like, we see crabs. I suppose we do see crabs like on the beach. So that's probably a more normalized thing. But I've never seen a lobster like in person that was not in a restaurant, you know? So that fact was very compelling for me. And it made me hope that other people will watch that and be like, oh, like these animals exist outside of the context of a restaurant, because I think we normalize those things and that makes it easier to consume them. If all you think about when you think about a lobster is, oh, this is something for me to consume, then I think that this could be a powerful tool.
Yeah. I mean, I recognize that when we're asking the question, like, is this a vegan film, that people don't typically think of the octopus as an exploited animal, even though obviously people consume octopi, people consume lobsters. Certainly, like you said, the context of a lobster is a fancy dinner. Like, that's what people think. They think of a fancy dinner, a bib, or maybe a depressing tank at the supermarket. I think there's a lot of value in transforming the image of these animals that I think in general don't garner a lot of empathy. You know, they're crabs and lobsters are kind of these weird, like underground armored spiders of the sea, you know, like it's kind of gross to people. It's people aren't like hanging around in the ocean very often. And so I do think that there's a lot of power in that, but it makes me hesitate to think if it's like necessarily like a vegan film, because I feel like there's kind of this this really big divide between wild animals and animals that are typically considered ones that we eat, you know, and that there's like getting people to respect animals that are considered, generally speaking, to be like wild animals, like a cougar, or preserve the black bear population. And I think even an octopus kind of falls into that category, versus like there are people that have great respect for those animals, do a lot of work to preserve their habitats and save the, you know, whatever. But there's this total disconnect when it comes to the animals that we have been sort of conditioned to believe are here for us humans to consume. And so I think that there are, for as beautiful of a film as this is, and for as much as it would be beneficial, I think, for anybody to watch it, it does feel like it's not necessarily going to help anyone really make that connection for the animals that we most consider to be animals used for food. And I hope that people feel a little bit different about the crab and the lobster, but the film isn't about them. It's just kind of these fleeting moments. You're like, what the hell? That crab is swimming. Like, that crab is straight up swimming. That crab is not walking on the bottom of the ocean. And like, you're like, whoa, what a weird thing. You know, but it's not like the focus. The focus isn't like, look at the rich inner emotional life of this crab and the life cycle of this crab and this crab timing their death to coincide with the hatching of their babies and all of that kind of stuff. So I do think that this film has limits, and maybe that's fine. It's probably fine. You know, every film doesn't have to do every little thing. Hopefully this can be like a gateway film for veganism for a lot of people. But I do think that it kind of upholds the intelligence equals moral consideration and the divide between wild animals and domesticated, you know, like food animals.
Andy, you know who is walking along the ocean floor?
Like that old octopus lady? Like, I mean, I just learned so much. I saw so many things. I didn't know octopi could like make horns, you know, like all of these things. When the octopus goes out of the water, I feel like I've seen one video of that before, but in general, you're just like, wow, this octopus is such a skilled, like evasive maneuver, puller offer. Much better at doing that than me speaking about it.
Andy, I think one of the things, and this has not really as much to do with the animal, like the vegan messaging of the movie, as much as just the enjoyment of the movie. I feel like this movie did such a great job at making you feel as though Craig Foster was the sole person responsible for this entire movie. Like, when I was watching this, I was like, did he film, write, direct, star? He's the sole person that's ever talking in the movie. In my mind, it seems like it's a movie that is just by him. And I looked it up afterwards, and it says all this stuff was filmed like 10 years ago, and they've been creating this movie for 10 years afterwards. And, but the thing that made me think of this, the part where the octopus goes on land, it's just like, this movie could certainly have been a more boring, like wildlife documentary type film, but it wasn't. When that octopus gets on land, Craig is like following her with his camera, and he emerges from the water, and you hear this like big gasping of air as he's struggling to, you know, he's trying to stay with the octopus. So he's like gasping for air. It's like, there are these moments that are genuinely very tense, and the music definitely helps. There's the music at times is, you're like, ah, I see how they want me to feel at this exact moment, because it's like really scary music or really tense music. But there are genuine moments where you're like, oh, what's going to happen? I don't know. And Craig himself is gasping for breath as he emerges from the water, and I loved it.
Yeah. I mean, Paul, I also had that thought as I was watching the film. Obviously, the directors are listed as Pippa Ehrlich and James Reed, who I believe are also listed as the writers on IMDb. But generally speaking, I was like, it feels like, with the exception of a few shots, everything in there felt as if it was one person doing it. And maybe that's because I've just been immersed in the world of Alone, where people have to film themselves and it involves setting up the camera and then walking all the way back and then filming themselves walk up the mountain and all that kind of stuff. But my assumption was all of the octopus footage was filmed by Craig. And then as they figured out what they needed to stitch it together, they went and filmed all the other stuff, like the aerial shots of him swimming, the shots of like a lot of the sharks that are kind of interstitched with like the chase sequence. I'm pretty positive we're not actually filmed at that specific moment. They just needed a shot of the pajama shark at that moment, because otherwise Craig was probably always focused on the octopus. But the extent that I was assuming the vast majority of this was filmed by Craig, I was even thinking, is he even talking to anyone? Like, it's being filmed as if it's like an interview that's going on, but it feels as if he's reading a monologue. And I kind of just pictured him setting up the camera and he's just sort of looking off screen and talking to nobody just to capture that audio.
Yeah. Andy, I was thinking about the filming myself too, because I you must be right that, for instance, when there's the shark chase sequences, the films that are just of sharks swimming around, yeah, those were probably filmed afterwards. However, I will say there are a few shots where I'm like, is this, are we seeing the thing that's being described happening right now? Like, there's one shot where the octopus is like hiding in this kelp, in this like, curtain of kelp, I suppose, this curtain of kelp, and you see the octopus, and then you just like see the shark swimming in the background, and you're like, this is like a horror movie shot. Like, this is how it would be shot. It's like the octopus is in the foreground and like hiding and just like looking at the camera, and then you see the shark like slowly behind, and I'm like, did Craig get this in the moment? And
must have.
And if he did, props to Craig, chef kiss. There was, however, Andy, a few shots of the octopus where you could see both of Craig's hands and the camera was moving. And I said, how is he getting these shots right now?
Yeah. I mean, I got the feeling that like towards the end of the filming, they were like, we need some like better footage. And like he brought in his son or somebody else to like hold the camera for a couple of moments. But those don't really come until much later in the film.
But yeah, the filming was awesome. And I think it works greatly to the film's credit that it's like, it seems like this whole thing is just Craig, and it's Craig. It feels like it's all him, and that you don't feel the directors and the writers there. Andy, honestly, when the credits rolled, I was like, it's not going to surprise me if the credits roll and it just says Craig Foster. And then like, that's it. That's the entire credits.
But, Craig Foster, executive producer, Moby.
So I loved that aspect about the movie.
Yeah, no, it felt like a very intimate, self-contained story. And I just feel like I can't recommend it enough, Paul.
Can I tell you something funny? Can I point out something funny, Andy?
Is it as funny as that baby octopus arm?
I loved that baby octopus arm. This is a moment where I feel like the movie is better unspoiled. You know, we're in the spoiler section, so people beware. But
Paul, the level of emotion that I felt, I'll say shockingly, I did not shed a single tear while watching this film, but I felt so invested. And when the shark did the barrel roll and ripped off the octopus tentacle, I was like devastated.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, no. Oh.
Andy, the only thing that kept me going at that moment was I looked at the time and saw there was still 50 minutes left and said, oh, thank God, like the octopus is going to be okay, because otherwise, what are they going to do for 50 more minutes?
Well, an octopus funeral. there's a really sad moment of realization when Craig says that the average lifespan of this type of octopus is 1 year. And I immediately was like, so we're going to see this octopus die, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I guess I just assumed they live for much longer. I don't know if the larger ones
forever.
Live significantly longer, but I was kind of shocked at how short their lifespan was.
Yeah. Andy, I do think it's, this is based off absolutely nothing. I feel like larger octopus maybe live longer. That fact seems like it's correct, and I'm not going to check it. Andy's looking it up right now. I can tell he's got his lookup face.
I do have a very specific lookup face. I am Googling longest living octopus.
Like, whenever you see those giant octopus, there's no way that they're 1 year old.
Just a big old baby. Well, I can tell you this. The giant Pacific octopus grows bigger and lives longer than any other octopus species. The size record is held by a specimen that was 30 feet across and weighed more than 600 pounds. Averages are more like 16 feet and 110 pounds. They live to be about 4 years old, with both males and females dying soon after breeding.
Wow, 4 years old. That's pretty short for something that is 30 feet long.
This says 30 feet across. That must be length, right?
I guess.
I'm just thinking it's 30 feet wide.
Oh my God. That would be
200 feet long.
But even Andy, 30 feet long is like a boat. That's like a small boat.
Yeah. My band used to tour in an airport shuttle bus that was only 24 feet long, and that thing was freaking huge. So. Man, 4 years just seems so short. I just assumed octopi were like wise old sages of the sea.
Yeah, like turtles, like they were 300 years old or something.
Yeah, damn.
Anyways, Andy, the funny thing I was going to point out, so I wanted to see when this movie was made, so I went over to the Wikipedia page for My Octopus Teacher, and I
Paul,
will say...
For the listener, I just noticed Paul put in all caps in bold, Andy, don't look at the Wikipedia for this movie yet, which... For the record, I literally never do. So
that's good. That's good, because there's gold on here, Andy. Before you look at it, I just want to point out there's a, as most, you know, Wikipedia pages for movies have, there's a synopsis where the synopsis in this Wikipedia page just describes the entire movie. So it's not really a synopsis as much as just the entire movie. And also, dear listeners, don't read the synopsis of this movie, because it describes the movie in the most bland and emotionless way possible. Like, if I just read the synopsis, I would say, wow, this movie sounds boring as hell. But Andy, go ahead and go over to that Wikipedia page. Can you read out the cast for me, please?
Okay, hold on. The cast list says... Craig Foster, little octopus.
Craig's son, doesn't even get a mention, but little octopus.
I mean, Paul, obviously Craig is returning home at night most of the time, but there was just all this talk about reconnecting with the son. But then I was like, but then the dad's also like, see you later, son. I am going to go swim with this octopus literally every single day, no matter what else is happening in my life. And it felt like it was like a weird thing to bring up when you're basically leaving your son constantly.
Well, I was wondering, Andy, I was like, does this guy have a day job that he's going to? Because it was my impression that he's going to swim like every morning. He's going to swim every morning and then like coming back and doing some job during the day. Like that's what I assumed he was doing. But I could be wrong. He could just be going and swimming all day, every day with this octopus.
He gets paid in octopus money. Comes home with a new set of like shells for his armor. It's great.
But yeah, Andy, this is a great movie. I will say, I don't love the name of the movie, My Octopus Teacher. I don't think you watch much anime, Andy, but My Octopus Teacher, if you went to like a anime name generator, like for a TV show, that My Octopus Teacher would 100% show up.
It kind of sounds like it would be like a Miyazaki film or something like yeah. that. Like yeah. The studio, the sequel to My Neighbor Totoro or whatever.
I ironically, Andy, I'm also currently watching an anime in which it's about a high school teacher who is like this alien creature who looks like an octopus. So I am literally watching a show about an octopus teacher.
Yeah, Paul, I agree with you wholeheartedly. My heart is full with agreement. I had seen a lot of people recommending it just on like, you know, my Facebook feed, and I was like, yeah, I'm sure it's cool to watch an octopus. And then, you know, we got some like messages or comments saying you should review this film. So that's when I was like, okay, let's do that. This seems like it'd be like a nice thing to do. But yeah, I feel like the title isn't really doing it any justice. And I also feel like the posters and stuff are that I've seen are just like really kind of don't convey the lush beauty of this film.
If I may suggest, Andy, The Octopus. That's the title.
What about like The Secret Lives of Octopi?
That could, I don't know. That seems like a sequel to, I don't know, The Notebook or something. I've never saw The Notebook. I assume there's octopus in it.
There's that right? The book Consider the Lobster. Like what if there was like Consider the Octopus or something? But yeah, like The Octopus, or even like The Octopus and I, or like, I don't know. My octopus teacher just feels like, yeah, it does not inspire me to want to watch the film. I guess, but it's intriguing. You're like, what is this octopus teaching this guy?
But boy, Andy, am I glad we watched this film, because probably going to watch it again tomorrow.
I feel like it could be the type of thing that I put on in the background while I'm doing other work. So
yeah,
it's very, very, very calming. Highly recommend.
Yeah.
Go check it out on Netflix. Have you seen it? Let us know what you think of it. You can send your thoughts into thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. Are we wrong to like this film? You can let us know with an angry email.
Or now, as we've been suggesting, an angry voice message via email.
Yes, please. I'm waiting for the angry voice messages to come in.
That's all we got to say about it. Andy, you got anything you want to promote?
Well, if you want to support the podcast, you can go to thebeardedvegans.com/beardo. You can go to compassionco.com and get in on that sweet, sweet turkey tea right now. Use the code Beardo for 15% off. And otherwise, all I have to say is this was just such a beautiful, beautiful experience, Paul. I'll be thinking about that baby octopus arm, that swimming crab, and the swimming lobster for a long time to come. And I'm going to have nightmares about those weird starfish.
Yeah. Although, Andy, are we being speciesist right now by really dunking on those creepy, creepy star guys?
Paul, I'm sure we absolutely are. So hold the emails. Paul, I was thinking that there was a moment in this film. This is going to be really bad. There's a moment in this film in which the octopus loses an arm and which only has 7 arms left. And I was thinking that each of those 7 arms must represent a different word, which might be...
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off. Well, it was like the first time you haven't said the following 7 words, and I didn't know you were teeing me up. I'm sorry.
Emotionally intelligent, all of that an animal is for them to be considered dolphins, crows, primates.
Primates.
Dolphins, crows, primates.
Andy, I will. I did not want to break that beautiful monologue that you were just going on. You did say crab a bunch of times, and you meant to say octopus. But I think people will understand that you meant the octopus and not the crab. You were like, oh, and the crab has this rich emotional life, and the crab times their death with the hatching of the babies.
Well, I'm saying that the crab, like, we're not getting a documentary that's doing that.
Andy, I see what I was in the wrong there. But yes, the octopus walking along the seafloor was a sight to be seen.